This is Frank Prattle. My name is Zephyr Thrall. You're listening to WPS1, PS1 Contemporary Arts Center, a MoMA affiliate at www.wps1.org. You might also be listening in San Francisco at KPOO 89.5, Poor People's Radio. And then again, you might be listening to the San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery website at www.sfacgallery.org, and of course at frankprattle.com. Today, it's a beautiful day here. It's March 1st, 2008, and I have two amazing guests with me. Margaret Tedesco, who is an artist here in San Francisco. Hi, Margaret.
Hello.
And Jocelyn Sadenberg, a writer here in San Francisco as well. Hi, Jocelyn.
Hi.
Maybe, Margaret, you can start it out and just kind of give a brief introduction of yourself.
Let's see. I've been living in San Francisco since 89, and... Is that all right? Okay. And I am an artist here in the city, as well as run an artist-run space out of my apartment, and work for the San Francisco Art Institute.
Sounds good. Jocelyn, yourself?
I've been living in San Francisco. I'm going to copy your form. Since 1994. Prior to that, I grew up and lived in New York City. And I'm a writer, and I work as a librarian and archivist in the San Francisco Public Library. I'm also part of a collective that's a publishing collective, and I've done curating at various arts centers and writing venues, and currently part of a really exciting new collective called the Nonsite Collective.
Okay, we'll get more into that in just a second. So for the listener, the general theme of this show and the Frank Prattles of late has been public versus private. And we're going to dig in a little bit with that today with both Margaret and Jocelyn. And one of the ways that I was thinking about it when framing kind of the intersections between both of you is that you both have strong personal practices. You know, Jocelyn yourself being a writer and a poet, and Margaret yourself doing multimedia installation all over the place, video, everything. And in addition to that, you both happen to have very strong public practices as well. Jocelyn, you being involved in press and publishing, I would say collective, no? And Margaret, you running a gallery as well, being the director and curator of Second Floor Projects. So maybe you guys can just start talking a little bit about how it is that you negotiate that balance, because I know it's a tricky one, you know? I mean, a lot of people find it hard enough just to do one, but to do both is nigh impossible often. Jocelyn.
Actually, I really find that the public practice feeds my private practice. I'm a little uncomfortable with those terms, public and private, because I feel like they're both they sort of interpenetrate and are extremely permeable. But a lot of the work that I do in my public practice as a curator, as a publisher, in some ways extends my own interests and curiosities and sort of feeds back on them. So it's not so divisive or sort of adversarial. And in some ways they all feel very private in that it's, the communities are, I feel tremendous like friendships and affinities in them. And so it's hardly, you know, I'll often introduce an event and there'll be maybe one person in the room who I don't know and I'll make a point of introducing myself to them. So I feel like it isn't public in the sense of like anonymous or some out there separate from my own kind of private or domestic, I don't know. They're very united. So that's how I negotiate them.
Good. Margaret, yourself?
I think that for me, it's always felt pretty organic. I think my practice as an artist, which includes in the 80s, I was a choreographer. And I put on a lot of performance events in renegade spaces in those days with performance art, you know, bumped up against dance and various possible experimental, little tiny experimental pieces of theater. And it's been kind of a natural progression for me to always, and I would tend to agree with some of what Jocelyn, I don't, they're not Vine, somehow it's just so organic for me that I never think twice about it. It just happens easily. It shifts easily, and one informs the other, and vice versa. I mean, in this more recent situation, being that my apartment now has become this space, I am getting strangers. Whereas before, it's true, because I was at Langton for 7 years as a curatorial board member there.
At New Langton Arts?
New Langton Arts, where Jocelyn also was. And we, you know, those shows, you know, they're very friendly, because you tend to know everyone, and then you get the handful that are the outside people visiting in town, or somebody's brought somebody. But now I'm actually, especially with the most current show, there's a lot more strangers knocking at my door that I didn't, you know, have that experience as much before. So it's, yeah.
So, I mean, you've definitely crossed that bridge between public versus private by inviting people off the street, you know, mm-hmm. in a sense, directly into your home. And what's that experience like? I mean, have you had fairly, you know, good feedback? Has anybody trashed the place? I mean,
yeah, everything's been fine. it's all been lovely, and you know, it's all word of mouth. I mean, I'm not in the foot traffic of downtown, so it's not like I'm, you know, there's a lot of, you know, as this space would be, where you would just get people from the bus stop possibly wandering in. I mean, you have to sort of look. I'm a destination. You have to look for me. But yeah, it's interesting to open my front door on Sunday and not know who's standing there. And, you know, being a woman alone, you think about things sometimes. You know, you go, okay, I'm in my apartment by myself Sunday afternoon with this artwork, and here's this person. But generally, I don't have those, you know, ideas coming around too often.
One of the things that I'm particularly fascinated, having been to second floor projects, is the intimacy that you can attain with an art that you simply can't get in a space even like this space, or, you know, a white cube, if you will. Being in somebody's house, of like taking the steps, you know, or the elevator, and then like walking through somebody's front door, you're immediately drawn into a project that way. And what's been your experience that way? Have people responded favorably to
that? Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, moreover, I'm getting people saying that they're really enjoying hanging around on Sunday, because it isn't something that you feel like you skirt into and feel maybe uncomfortable around, and then look at the work really quick and feel a little bit awkward and then run out. They want to stick around. I tend to see that people are having a lot of conversations, a lot of cross conversations between, you know, different the different forms that they engage, number one, and then also the just, you know, to speak about art in general and other things. They're not always talking about art, but the work, of course, is provoking first, and then it just spins on itself. And people do hang around, and it's been enjoyable. It's been kind of this Salon Sunday kind of experience, you know. So
that's good. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of how different practices and different fields kind of, you know, as you said, rub and bump up against each other and kind of cross-pollinate that way, you know, Jocelyn, what's been your experience as far as writing, and how that, you know, meets the art world or doesn't meet the art world, or if you have any interest whatsoever in that, you know?
In the art world?
What, in art in general or the art world?
Just in terms of my own practice, it's much more in, the sources are not so much my personal life, but rather a lot of it has to do with reading, looking at art, looking at film, listening to music, and so it's a great source for me, visual art, and also a great pleasure. It's not just that it's some use value, like I can, you know, reap it for something, but so I feel like I'm pretty, I don't know, I think like writers in general, maybe I'm making a big generalization that's wrong, but I would say that writers that I know are very interested and involved in other arts communities, more so than other arts communities are involved in the writing community, that it's sort of more one-way street. Mm-hmm. But it's not really, that's just an observation. And I think one of the ways that I've gotten to know a lot of local artists and their work is through doing Poets Theater with Kevin Killian. and who's introduced me to a lot of local artists who I've got to perform with and also become much more familiar with them as people and their work and their projects over the last 10 years. So I'd say for me, my community is pretty interwoven with a lot of different kinds of arts communities, and I feel like it does enrichen.
It's good. Enrich. I like it. Go with it.
Enriching my life. I just wanted to say something about Margaret's house and her gallery in her house. That one of the things that I like the most about it, but in addition to the shows, is how her house is transformed. So there's this room that looks like a gallery space, and it's white, and it's empty of furniture. And then there's this other room that has all the other stuff in it that's just been, and it's like this incredible installation in itself called like Margaret's Life compacted into one room in order to create a gallery in another room. And I'm just like, I love that. I'm always like, can I look in there? I like love peeking in, and it's kind of, so just in terms of how the personal or the private and the public intertwine, like I think that space is kind of a performance of that, and it's really, I don't know, are you documenting?
Yes.
You are. I thought you would be. I was like, that needs documentation in addition to the shows.
And so when you move the stuff, do you, because you move it there and then move it back, or is it all just stays in there?
No, the space stays dedicated for the most part, except that during the week I sort of have to live out of the hallway again, and part of, you know, the space in the center, you know, can be a depository for laundry or something where I have to sort of get ready for work and kind of, you know, go through the motions. But for the most part, the space stays pretty empty. I mean, right now it's being inhabited by the most current artist that's going to show their opening next week. So there's a blow-up bed, an arrow bed that's has been sitting there all week, which we've moved away today because we're going to show the space this afternoon again for a little while. Yeah, but generally it stays dedicated. Yeah.
And so,
sorry.
One of the things that I love about both of your guys' practice is that you're both involved strenuously and seriously with the concept of an archive. And you know, myself, I'm a dedicated pack rat. I collect every damn thing there is, and then I like to, you know, file it away in alphabetical or sometimes numerical or sometimes mystical order, depending on, you know, my mood or the day. And and let's talk a little bit about the archive. You know, Jocelyn, you're pro.
A pro. Wait, I want to know what mystical cataloging looks like. I'm very curious.
Well, stick around. I'll give you lessons afterwards.
Lessons afterwards. Okay. That's a new course in library school. Mystical organization and classification, a la Zephyr. So yeah, I work as an archivist and a librarian. I've worked in a variety of settings, special collections, academic libraries, and currently I work in the special collections in the public library in San Francisco. And so my current job is I do a lot of public service. I'm really helping patrons, and there's all different kinds of patrons using that collection, from academic level researchers to people who just want to learn about their building in San Francisco, genealogists, lots of students. We're the official repository for the city and county of San Francisco, so we have medical examiner records dating back to the 19th century and water records. And so people are doing a variety of research, and basically my job is to help them access the materials they need for their research. And it's pretty gratifying as work, you know, the day job thing. And then also, I mean, it's become this very sort of, everybody's talking about the archive topic lately. It seems in the air, very
Archive fever.
Somebody last night, a French speaker and reader translated Archive Fever, Derrida's book, as "Archives make me sick." And then she said, you know, sick, as in the good way, is when something really intense happens and someone goes, "That's sick." And because the French is mal d'archive, I think. I don't really know French, so something like that. Mal, sick, malade, I don't know. But so there's this really interesting relationship of artists to archives. Like they have personal archives that are their inspiration and their resources that they draw from, but they also use official repositories archives to do research for their projects. And I've noticed this really sometimes almost hostile relationship of artists towards archives, or particularly towards archivists or librarians, as seen as these sort of gatekeepers. And it's like Susan Howe, who's this writer who I love and admire, and who's written extensively on Emily Dickinson and early U.S. American writers, and she's great, but she like has this beef against the librarians at Harvard, and she writes about it. It becomes part of like the text, and it's true. Like, how many people can thumb through Emily Dickinson's library and see her marginalia? Well, I don't know. Like, as many as they want to is my feeling, but it's not always that. You know, that doesn't always happen.
Have you experienced some flack here in San Francisco as well from artists?
No, because I mean, a lot of artists do come. I mean, I see people, friends like Coulter comes into the library and various other people, and they use the materials. And because we're a public library and you don't need to have a special letter saying you're a special person to get in and use our materials, I don't receive personal flack at all. But it's not so easy at other places, even in the Bay Area, like the Bancroft. You know, even just to get into the National Library in France, you have to have letters saying that you're like a bona fide researcher.
Interested party.
Right. So I don't get it. And I feel kind of proud to be working in a public library in that sense, that it really is available, you know, and we try to make them available. And so that's my experience with archives.
And Margaret, for yourself, I mean, you practically run an archive out of your
yeah,
house.
Yeah, and my secret, I probably should have gone down the rabbit hole with you to library science school, because I think it's always been a desire. In fact, my day job at SFAI, it gives me plenty of pleasure because I've been working there since 91, and I pretty much know the picture file there very well, and you know, recognize a lot of the things people, when they're asking for things, I'm the one that kind of has to go and retrieve the images for those moments that the school needs them for, and also the history. I do graphic design for them, so printed matter, ephemera. I mean, I have invitations in my apartment that go back in time.
How far back?
Probably from the 70s.
Not bad.
Shows, yeah. And one day I'm going to just create a whole box where people can flip through them, because I think it's fun. People will go, oh, I remember that show, or I didn't see that show, or wow, you know. But I did do this room that Jocelyn is mentioning. I was in a show when the Walter McBean used to be a more national gallery exhibition space, whereas now it's international, based on the curators, you know, Hu Hanru and the people that are there now. We used to have these 100 annual exhibitions, and I've been in a few of them, and so one of them was called Recess. And Recess, I literally U-hauled the paper contents of my apartment to the Walter McBean, and I sat there 6 hours a day and you know, collated it, gave it away, recycled it. I only went home with half. But of course, since that show was in 1999, I built that half back out again easily. But yeah, I mean, even Tarek and I have been speaking recently, like going on trips. What do I buy when I go to another country? I buy paper. I bring paper home. I bring everything paper. You know, I'm very, and I know my archive very well. In fact, the name of that piece for that show was called "These Stacks Seem to Be Well Massaged," and the reason that I coined that, I didn't coin it, but I'm sorry, somebody coined it when they walked into my apartment once, which was Anne Chamberlain. She walked into my apartment once and she looked around the room and she said, these stacks seem to be well massaged. And it is true, because when I sent that whole part of myself out the door to the Walter and McBean, I freaked out when I went home that first night, because my apartment echoed, number one, and number two, that all that data is my fodder for my work. I mean, my work is informed a lot by film writers, you know, and other visual artists, et cetera, you know, and so all of the above. But definitely the stacks themselves are my random going to the, you know, the card index in the library, you know, where we used to go more often.
It still exists.
It still exists. They brought it in, they brought it back because Anne Chamberlain and Anne Hamilton did that project and that where the walls are covered in the cards.
This
and
is at the San Francisco Public Library.
The main library.
Where they've taken the Dewey Decimal cards.
Yeah, and gave them to everybody to write on and then created the wallpaper and the three floors. But when they thought that that whole archive was going to disappear, people got, I think the community came back and said, we want the card catalog somewhere in there for us to use,
right,
you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I lost a little track there, but yeah, archives are very important to me, and also I just, you know, kind of salivate at the anywhere I can put things together in order.
Yes,
yeah, I'm notorious yes. going to a thrift store and like starting to line things up because they go together. You know, I just do it automatically. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna just do that for them. They hopefully they'll notice, maybe not. You know,
uh-huh.
So anyway.
One question I have for you is both of you are Americans, am I correct?
I'm yes. sorry?
Yeah.
Americans?
Yes. Born in the United
yes.
States.
Yes.
And do you feel that this phenomena of the archivist or the collector or the, you know, the pack rat, as I identify myself, you know, not being quite to the level, I think, of official archivist yet, you know, maybe one day, you know, I can hope, is something that is fairly, you know, I would say, bred into our culture of consumerism? Have you noticed that traveling abroad as well, that there tends to be that feeling of, you know, of having stuff and then like organizing that stuff into specific piles or, you know, rows or what columns, what have you, you know what I mean? Do you find that to be true or is it a worldwide phenomenon?
I don't know, I'm not a collector. I like grew up around collectors, and so I'm like I've tried to be a collector, and I've always failed. I was like, postcards, how about that? Or mechanical pencils, or something. But I've never gotten the, you know, I've lived with people who are like, you know, snow globes or whatever, but like, I can't collect.
Books?
I have a fair amount of books,
how
but
many?
I don't even.
How many?
I have no idea.
Like a wall? Two walls?
A couple of walls, but they're not organized. I confess, they're not even alphabetized. They're nothing. They're just like, oh, I think it's around here, and I feel around with my eyes shut, and I find
do you,
it.
Do you keep that intentionally like that?
No, I feel like a disgrace, like a dirty librarian. Like, I feel, I wish that, I want my,
dirty librarian.
I wish, and every year it's like, you know, New Year's resolution, organize my books, you know, think less about others, whatever. But like, I never get to the books. That was, but the collector thing, I don't know, we do, we have more. I lived in South America for 4 years in Argentina, and it always just blew me away, like how little trash people had, because they just had less stuff, you know, and you would go to, and when I came back, the biggest part of my culture shock was just like the amount of packaging for all the crap, you know, just like, it was really, really traumatizing, the amount of stuff, and yeah, you know, the number of pairs of jeans we all have, or, you know, I have. And so, but I'm not a collector. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's, I mean, definitely it has to do with economic conditions, the ability to be a collector, even if you're collecting trash, like you need to live in a culture that produces enough trash to collect it. But I don't know, I wouldn't want to generalize, but we do produce way more than we need, that's for sure.
I mean, my experience of going to other countries and, you know, staying in other people's homes, I mean, it depends, sure. It depends on the artists that I would be staying with. But like in France, for instance, the apartments are small. People are not collecting things and like crazy. They have really compact apartments, the kind of apartment it's like, you know, I'm having a guest and the bed falls out of somewhere and the, you know, things are just kind of like really kept in the walls until it needs to come out in a way, and you don't see, I mean, at least that's my experience, and I've spent a lot of time in France, for one. But the thing is that, yeah, I think it's, I mean, I tend to know a lot of people who are collectors because of the artists I know and what they make and what they, you know, and, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a studio, you can keep your apartment clear. I mean, I like keeping it all around me. Like I said, when it all left me and went away for 6 weeks to the San Francisco Art Institute to be housed there, it was a panic. It really was. I was coming home at night going, I don't have that stack over there. I mean, these stacks that have been well massaged have caused problems in relationships.
Oh, do tell, do tell.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have...
Jealousy of the stack?
No. No. Girlfriends who wanted to burn them.
Oh.
Yeah. They're just like, they're calling them the island. Please remove the island from the middle of the room. I can't stand it anymore. You know, yeah. You know, very intense moments around the stacks, you know, so... Yeah, I probably should work in a library, and then probably would relieve me of a part of this, maybe, right. You know, a part, yeah.
One of the things that I was particularly fascinated that you guys did beforehand was you did your homework, and you emailed each other a couple phrases each, a couple words, and maybe you'd like to go over some of your favorites here. And you know, I don't speak French, but I'm going to give this one a whirl. Coterie?
Coterie is not French.
Is it? What word is that?
It may come. I actually don't know the etymology of it, but it's
etymology is
it
French.
May be French, but yeah. Then it probably comes from Coterie. Latin. So that's something that I was particularly interested in. I made this triad: community, coterie, friendship, and trying to sort of think through those three terms together. And then Margaret looked up the word coterie because she said that she expressly loved the word. And, oh no, she expressly loved the number three definition of coterie, which I like expressly love now too.
Oh, yeah.
A group of prairie dogs occupying a communal burrow. And I was like, yeah, that's my writing community. We just all want to sleep like a pile of hamsters together in the corner. And no, but you know, I think that, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know, I'll stop there and let Margaret continue.
Oh, I think the one thing that got me off was cross-dressing forms. I really was having fun when I put the list together and thought about that, because I feel like the community that I really do, you know, am in constant contact with, there is a we, if I may say, that tends to cross-dress the forms, like put them through all kinds of different filters to see what happens. I mean, Kevin is Kevin Killian, who's sitting right here in the room with us, has the best versions of those moments in his work, and I've completely. Thus, why I asked Jocelyn here today too is that to be interviewing with Jocelyn, because I felt like we have a lot of alignment with a certain group of people that just really blend and mingle in all kinds of ways, you know. So
I think that, you know, the idea of, you know, I tried an experiment for a while, and maybe you guys can help me with this experiment. I tried for a solid month to not say the word art, and to not say the word community, and to not say the word project, which is just about impossible if you want to tackle this thing called art, you know, in some way. So no art, no community, no project. And the idea of a group of prairie dogs occupying a communal burrow, now that's the kind of idea
that that's art, community, and project all rolled up in one.
A neighborhood, right, together, right. Yeah. But, you know, of gatherings being like, you know, slumber parties and things like that, different recontextualizing ideas for, you know, how to mix with people. And that's something I'm super fascinated about, in forming groups that are not necessarily insular in an art world, you know, idea that you were talking about, like cross-pollinating with writers and, you know, people who are doing choreography and things like that. Do you sense a lot of that in San Francisco specifically, or something, you know, is more national or international that is a trend in art these days or not? Was that a stumper?
Well, the stumper part is I'm not that familiar with other places, so I wouldn't want to, like, make some generalization about San Francisco versus New York I mean, I can make generalizations about the difference.
You're from New York.
I am from New York, and I think the thing about New York, I mean, I feel like I am New York and still in so many ways. I lived there for 30 years, but New York doesn't really know how to do community. I said that word. New York doesn't really know how to, what do we do?
Communal,
slumber parties very
communal
well.
Communal boroughs.
It doesn't do communal boroughs very well. And I think part of it is that it's, so it's proximity. It's close proximity to sort of the center of art powers, publishing, museums, galleries. And because here in San Francisco, we're not quite so closely pressed up to those powerful centers, that community, we do community better in some ways. And I think that part of that is the sort of interpermeability of communities and conversations between them that I think really does happen in San Francisco a lot from my experience. And I feel really grateful for that. Because, you know, writers are like kind of socially awkward and not so much fun like at parties, whereas like visual artists are much more exciting to.
You're saying that writers are boring at parties?
No, boring not.
No.
But
awkward?
Awkward,
yes.
Say. Yeah, some of them.
Nose pickers by the punch bowl.
No, you're saying that. I've never picked my nose by the punch bowl.
Margaret, yourself, what do you think about the flavor of San Francisco?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be generalizing as well, but I do, yeah, I mean, I think we do it pretty well here. I mean, this is what it comes, it seems pretty organic. I mean, the legacy of the city, what it, from the 60s on to now, I mean, these homegrown galleries were going on in the 60s in Bruce Conner, and people like that were having Gallery 6 in those days, and there was all kinds of things going on around here that were, you know, and I think people, there was periods where I think people wanted to get away from that because we were kind of coined with this sort of icky thing on us, you know, from other places perhaps, that, you know, they do this touchy-feely, you know, like even the way the Art Institute sometimes is read as this touchy-feely school that used to be, which there was probably a lot of that going on, you know, but I mean,
hopefully it's a school.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to generalize it so much, but I think we do it pretty well here. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I think that's about all the time we have today. But thank you both so much.
Thank you. Zephyr.
My name is Zephyr. You're listening to Frank Prattle. You're listening to WPS1, PS1 Contemporary Art Center, a MoMA affiliate at www.wps1.org. You're also listening to KPOO 89.5 FM here in San Francisco, Poor People's Radio. Then again, you might be listening to the San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery website at www.sfacgallery.org, or possibly to frankprattle.com. My guests today have been Jocelyn Sadenberg, who is a writer and poet here in San Francisco. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Margaret Tedesco, who is an artist and also runs Second Floor Projects. Thanks.
Thank you.